All right, get ready to dive into something pretty fascinating. The genealogy of Jesus Christ. You sent over those excerpts from the Gospel of Matthew, and
Right.
Wow, this isn't just your average family tree.
Oh, absolutely not. Genealogies were, well, they're a really big deal back then. Way more than just, you know, like tracing your ancestry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They determine like inheritance and social standing, even your claim to the throne. But Matthew's genealogy of Jesus, it's got layers, my friend, layers.
Okay, break it down for me. What makes this genealogy so special?
Well, first off, it's structured in a very deliberate way. Three sets of 14 generations each.
Okay.
And this wasn't just for, like, you know, easy reading. There was a deeper meaning there, probably tied to symbolism and numerology. We can maybe dig into that a bit later. But what really grabbed you is who Matthew decided to include in this lineage.
You mean like those surprising women we talked about earlier?
Exactly. You've got Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth. Now, these women were definitely not your typical Jewish matriarchs.
Hold on. Remind me, who were they again?
Okay, so Tamar, she actually disguised herself as a prostitute.
What?
Yeah, to secure an heir from her father-in-law. Talk about going to extreme lengths. Then there's Rahab. She was a Canaanite prostitute who helped the Israelites conquer Jericho. And Ruth was a Moabite woman, a foreigner, who showed incredible loyalty to her Jewish mother-in-law.
Wow, so not exactly who you'd expect to find in the Messiah's family tree, huh?
Right.
So wait, you're telling me Jesus is descended from a prostitute? That's pretty mind-blowing. Why would Matthew include these women? It's like he's deliberately trying to shake things up.
He's definitely making a point. You see, back then, Jewish society was incredibly patriarchal. Women, especially foreign women, were often marginalized. So by including these women, and not just any women, but women who challenged social norms and even broke the law, Matthew was hinting at the radical inclusivity of God's plan.
Okay.
It's like he's saying, hey, God's grace extends to everyone, even those considered outsiders.
Okay, so Matthew's sending a powerful message right from the start. But let's back up a bit. The genealogy begins with Abraham, right? Why start there?
Abraham is crucial. He's considered the father of the Jewish people, the one with whom God made a covenant, promising him countless descendants and a land of their own. So by starting with Abraham, Matthew connects Jesus to that foundational covenant, establishing him as the fulfillment of God's promise.
Ah, so Jesus is presented as the ultimate heir, the culmination of God's plan for his people. But the genealogy doesn't stop there. It goes through a whole bunch of other big names, right?
You bet. After Abraham, you've got Isaac, his son, chosen by God despite having an older half-brother. Then there's Jacob, known for his cunning and wrestling with God, and his son Judah, who becomes the ancestor of the tribe from which Jesus descends. Each of these figures carries significant weight in the Old Testament narrative, shaping the story of Israel and pointing towards the coming Messiah.
So it's like Matthew's laying the groundwork, highlighting these pivotal figures who played a role in shaping God's plan. But then he throws in those curveballs, those unconventional women, to kind of broaden our understanding of who belongs in this lineage. I'm starting to see how each name, each generation, adds another layer to the story.
Yeah.
This is way more intricate than I initially thought.
And we've only just scratched the surface. Remember those three sets of 14 generations I mentioned? Well, that pattern's going to take us through some pretty intense periods in Israel's history, from the heights of King David's reign to the devastating Babylonian exile.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. Let's dive into that next set of 14 generations and see where Matthew takes us.
All right, so we're moving into that second set of 14 generations. And let me tell you, things get pretty dramatic here. We're talking the rise and fall of the Davidic kingdom.
Oh, wow.
A period full of political intrigue, power struggles, and ultimately, a whole lot of heartbreak.
Ooh, intrigue and heartbreak. I'm all ears. But first, remind me, why is David such a big deal in this whole genealogy thing?
David, he's the king, you know, the legendary warrior poet.
Right.
Who united the tribes of Israel, established Jerusalem as the capital. And he's considered the archetype for all future kings. Remember that covenant God made with Abraham?
Yeah.
Well, it gets a major upgrade with David. God promises that David's dynasty will last forever, that a descendant of his will always rule over Israel.
Wow. Talk about high stakes.
Yeah.
Okay, so David's lineage is basically, it's like the royal bloodline, the ultimate power play in ancient Israel. But if I remember my Sunday school correctly, things didn't exactly go smoothly for his descendants, did they?
Not exactly. After David, we get Solomon, his son, known for his wisdom and for building that magnificent temple in Jerusalem.
Right.
But even Solomon, with all his wisdom, he made some questionable choices, leading to divisions within the kingdom.
So it's cracks in the foundation already. talking about foreshadowing.
Exactly. And it just goes downhill from there. We go through a string of kings, some good, some bad, some downright terrible. Rehoboam, Solomon's son. He loses a huge chunk of the kingdom due to his pride and arrogance. There's war, rebellion, political maneuvering. It's like a season of Game of Thrones set in ancient Israel.
Wow. So even with God's promise of, you know, an everlasting dynasty, things get pretty messy. Where does Matthew take us after all this royal drama?
Well, you can probably guess. All this infighting and disobedience eventually leads to disaster. The kingdom splits in two, and ultimately both halves are conquered and exiled. The northern kingdom falls to the Assyrians, and the southern kingdom, you know, the one descended from David, that one is conquered by the Babylonians. It's a period of profound loss, displacement, and spiritual questioning for the Israelites.
So Matthew deliberately ends this second set of 14 generations with the Babylonian exile. That's a pretty heavy way to wrap things up.
It's a bold move, isn't it? Matthew could have easily glossed over this dark period, but he chose to highlight it, to place it right in the center of Jesus's genealogy, and that's where things get really interesting.
Okay, I'm sensing a but coming.
But even in this moment of despair, there's a glimmer of hope. Remember that promise God made to David? Well, even though the Davidic kings, they messed up royally, pun intended,
right,
God doesn't abandon his people.
Okay.
The prophets continue to speak of a future restoration, a coming Messiah who will redeem Israel and establish a kingdom of peace and justice.
So by ending this section with the exile, Matthew is not only acknowledging like the struggles and failures of the past, but also setting the stage for like a new beginning,
mm-hmm.
a future hope that will be embodied in Jesus. It's like he's saying, yes, things have been bad, but don't lose hope. Redemption is coming.
Precisely. And that leads us into that final set of 14 generations where we see that glimmer of hope starting to take shape. We move away from those larger-than-life kings and into a period where the spotlight falls on more ordinary individuals, people living in the shadow of exile, yet holding on to that promise of a future Messiah. And it's in this final set of generations that we encounter a man named Joseph, Jesus's legal father.
Joseph. He's often kind of like sidelined in the Christmas story, overshadowed by Mary and the whole virgin birth thing. But you're telling me he plays a crucial role in this genealogy.
Absolutely. Remember how David's lineage was like the royal bloodline? Well, Joseph is a direct descendant of David, which means that Jesus, legally speaking, inherits that lineage, that claim to the throne.
So even though Jesus is conceived miraculously, he's still tied to the Davidic line through Joseph, fulfilling that ancient prophecy. Matthew's really connecting all the dots here, isn't he?
He's a master weaver, that's for sure. He's showing us how the story of Jesus isn't just some random event, but the culmination of centuries of history, promises, and expectations. And Joseph, despite not being Jesus's biological father, plays a vital role in linking Jesus to that past and setting the stage for his future mission.
It's like Joseph is the bridge between the old and the new, the link between the promise and its fulfillment. But hold on, if Joseph isn't the biological father, doesn't that create some theological wrinkles?
Well, that's where things get even more fascinating. Matthew clearly states that Jesus is conceived by the Holy Spirit. You know, a miraculous intervention that sets him apart from any earthly lineage. But by emphasizing Joseph's Davidic ancestry, Matthew is also showing us that Jesus is both fully human, A-N-D, fully divine, rooted in history, yet transcending it.
Okay, now my mind is officially blown. This genealogy is like a theological puzzle box, each layer revealing a new dimension of Jesus' identity and mission. So we've traced the lineage, explored the highs and lows of Israel's history, and arrived at this pivotal moment, the birth of Jesus. What can you tell us about how Matthew presents this momentous event?
All right, so we've journeyed through centuries, met some incredible characters, and now we're at the heart of it all. The birth of Jesus. I'm guessing Matthew doesn't just give us a simple, you know, and then baby Jesus was born, right?
Oh, you know Matthew better than that.
Yeah.
He sets the stage for something truly extraordinary, something that just, it shatters all expectations. Remember how we talked about those unconventional women in the genealogy, how they challenged the norms?
Well, get ready for the ultimate norm-shattering event. Mary, a young woman betrothed to Joseph, becomes pregnant by the Holy Spirit.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much the definition of unconventional. But why go this route? Why not have Jesus born in a more, shall we say, traditional way?
Well, because Matthew is highlighting the divine nature of Jesus right from the start. This isn't just, you know, like a human birth. It's the embodiment of God entering the world in a completely unprecedented way. And it's through this, you know, this miraculous conception that the genealogy truly takes on a whole new meaning.
So it's not just about tracing a bloodline, it's about something much bigger, something that transcends human lineage.
Exactly. The genealogy is about showing that Jesus is both rooted in history, fulfilling those promises made to Abraham and David, and breaking free from the constraints of human ancestry. It's about the intersection of the human and the divine, the earthly and the heavenly.
Wow, that gives a whole new depth to those, you know, like family trees we used to make in elementary school. But let's talk about the name itself, Jesus. What's the significance there?
The name Jesus is actually the Greek form of the Hebrew name Yeshua, which means Yahweh saves. And right from the get-go, that's exactly what the angel tells Joseph. You are to give him the name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins.
So the name itself is like, it's like a declaration of purpose, a statement of who Jesus is and what he came to do. It ties back beautifully to that theme of redemption that we saw brewing in the second set of generations, right?
Absolutely. Matthew is showing us that Jesus isn't just some, you know, like random baby born into a particular family. He's the culmination of God's plan for humanity, the fulfillment of centuries of longing and anticipation. He's the one who brings salvation, who breaks the chains of sin, who offers hope and forgiveness to all who believe.
Okay, I'm starting to see why this genealogy is so much more than just a list of names. It's like, it's a roadmap, a narrative tapestry that weaves together history, prophecy, and the very nature of God. But here's the question that's been swirling in my mind. We've traced the lineage that leads to Jesus, but what about the lineage that follows? Where do W.E. fit into this whole genealogical picture?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I think Matthew would say that through faith in Jesus Christ, we become part of his spiritual family, grafted into the lineage of redemption.
So it's not just about bloodlines anymore, but about like a spiritual connection, a shared inheritance of, you know, grace and forgiveness.
Precisely. And just like those unexpected figures in the genealogy, Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, you know, who were welcomed into the family despite their unconventional backgrounds, we too are offered a place at the table, regardless of our past mistakes or perceived shortcomings.
That's a powerful message of inclusivity. But it also makes me think, if we're part of this spiritual lineage, what does that mean for how we live our lives? Are we just supposed to, you know, sit back and bask in the glory of being part of the family? Or is there something more active, something more challenging that's being asked of us?
That's the challenge Matthew leaves us with, I think. He's presented us with this incredible story, this intricate tapestry of history and redemption. And now he's asking us, well, how will you carry this legacy forward? How will you embody the love, grace, and transformative power of Jesus in your own life and in the world around you?
So it's not just about tracing our roots. It's about extending those roots, becoming, you know, like branches that bear fruit, that spread the message of hope and redemption to others.
Exactly. Matthew's genealogy isn't just about the past. It's about the present and the future. It's about recognizing that we are part of something, something much bigger than ourselves, something that has the power to change the world. And it's an invitation to step into that story, to become active participants in God's ongoing work of redemption.
Wow. What a journey this has been. From a seemingly simple list of names to like this profound exploration of identity, purpose, and belonging, I don't think I'll ever look at a family tree the same way again.
Me neither. And that's the beauty of the deep dive, isn't it? Yeah. We take something that seems familiar and uncover hidden layers of meaning, complexity, and wonder.
It's like we've unearthed a treasure trove of insights. And now it's up to us to figure out what to do with those treasures. So to you listening, I encourage you, don't let this be just another podcast episode, you know, that you passively consume. Let it spark your curiosity, challenge your assumptions, and inspire you to dig deeper into your own understanding of faith, history, and the incredible story of Jesus Christ.
And remember, the genealogy doesn't end with us. It's a story that continues to unfold, a lineage of faith and redemption that we are invited to be a part of. What role will you play in carrying that story forward? That's the question I hope stays with you long after this deep dive is over.